Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is August 18th, 2005. This session, Five Assumptions North Americans Carry With Them, presented by Anne Basie and Mary Campbell in the Fireside Room. Let's listen in.
My name is Mary Campbell, and I work with the Division for Global Mission as part of the Latin America team. My part is to work with the companion synods who are relating to the churches in Latin America. And there are 22 companion synod relationships with Latin America.
You guys know what a companion synod relationship is?
No.
Synod of the ELCA and a church, a Lutheran church, in the region of Latin America.
Oh. So, for example, the Montana Synod relates to Bolivia. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anybody else know what their synod? I don't know who.
Any ELCA people who know who they're? Yeah,
I think ours is El Salvador, Medina Community Lutheran.
In Minnesota.
Okay. Oh, well, that's not your parish. That's
a sister parish.
Sister parish.
Right, that's a sister parish.
But there's a lot of exchanges like this.
Yeah, because yeah.
Is sister more intimate than the other one?
Well, it's there's a relationship between the two. It's something that a congregation has decided to do, and kind of independently, sometimes independently of what their synod is doing, and sometimes in conjunction with what their synod is doing.
Okay.
So. It just depends on how you got connected. This is a program that started in 1990, so it's not a real old program, but it came really close to the beginnings of the ELCA to try to get synods in the United States to have a global outlook and be connected someplace in the world. So I'm probably going to talk a little more about that tomorrow, but that's kind of my job, is to work with the companion synods in the U.S. and with the relationships they have with companion churches. And the reason that this is important, we talked about accompaniment the other day. The reason this is so important is for us, as the companion synod team of the Division for Global Mission, we see basically two areas where companion synod people and where people in the ELCA need to always, and all of us need to be in continual growth. One is in our cross-cultural understanding. Crossing cultures is not something that you can just, get down. Nobody can give you a book and say, all right, this is everything you need to know about El Salvador, now you're going to know, read this, and you're going to be able to do it. It's a process, it's kind of one of these spiral processes. It continues to unfold down. As you see one layer, you get to another layer that you need to learn. So that's why this is important. The second is response and advocacy. Particularly in Latin America, the churches are interested in seeing, they see the power that we have as United States citizens. They make a very strong differentiation between us as citizens and our government. And they will ask us all frequently for our advocacy on issues. But it's also occurring in churches all over the world now. And in the recent Companion Synod survey that we did, what we found was that people felt that we're hearing the voices of their companions, synods, the churches, that they wanted them to advocate but weren't really sure how. So we talked a little bit about globalization the other day, but this is the other side of it. This is crossing cultures. And this is the tricky part, really.
Mary, I just want to get one thing, get our fit understood. Our synod is in Washington, is with Namibia, mm-hmm. I believe. Is that the... Do I have this on the framework understood?
Yep, okay. That's part of it, yeah.
Okay.
It may have multiple relationships.
Okay.
38 synods have one relationship in the world, but the rest have multiple relationships. But, actually if we get into that, the ones that are the most healthy don't attempt too many relationships,
yeah.
Because that is very, very complex, and being able to have the energy in a synod to devote to that is really something else. But anyway,
yeah.
Now it's time to go on to the real topic for today, too.
That's the real topic. My name is Anne Basie, and I also work for the ELCA Division for Global Mission. And I've explained a few times that I work on the education team, which, sort of like the North America desk, our responsibility is to help bring some the gifts of the Global Church back to ELCA congregations. And as the writer for the division, I'm always looking out for great headlines and good story. So I laughed a couple weeks ago when I saw this article, because I thought, oh boy, can I use this in workshops? So before we start looking at identifying our own cultural biases and talk about what the cultural values are around the world, I wanted to read a few sentences about some people who have no sense even that they're looking at the world from a U.S. point of view. This is a movie review from the New York Times from a movie that's called Stealth that came out a few weeks ago. So we start at the top with a wonderful headline about not understanding what cultural values are bringing to the world. It says, traveling to exotic places and blowing things to bits. So in this movie, which is about, you know, it's sort of a Top Gun thing, there are two men and a woman, and they are pilots, and they travel around the world during a time when, you know, as the opening scroll explains, there's a constant threat of terrorism. So they go to all these places, putting out fires, fanning flames. They go to one, they only go to Thailand and really visit. And they said, well, that's an exotic backdrop for the usual military R&R. Beautiful locals with negligible English skills, etc. And it's the only foreign country that these happy three visit and don't shoot up. Then there's a little reflection here on the Bond movies and how one of their pleasures was that they kind of took you to a new place. You know, with James Bond, you could have a martini in the Bosphorus. He says, not so this movie. It inspires no such wanderlust. The reason isn't, well, the reason is, where is it? Almost every locale gets blown to bits almost as soon as the pilots come within shooting distance. Among the less fortunate territories, Myanmar, Tajikistan, North Korea, and Alaska, all of which come under intense fire. So this is about people traveling who don't even get close enough to people to recognize what their own cultural values are. So we'll just leave that as an example of where we're not going this morning.
Well, what we thought we would do is get people involved. This is interactive. So what we're going to do is actually number everybody off so you don't end up with people, and put you into small groups to talk about, to look at some values here, and to look at this. Each, everybody's going to get a pack of these, and in these little groups of three this morning, take 15 minutes to do two things. First of all, just look at this as whether it's a U.S. kind of Western European type of value or another value. You know, separate them into two piles, and then you probably will end up with a third pile that you're not quite sure about. And those you can go back to or decide these are maybe shared values or something. And then the second step of this, once you finish going through them the first time and sorting them out and maybe sorting your third pile as much as you feel like doing, is trying to put them together with values that might be U.S., Western, European, or non. You know, and this is a place where you should feel free to share stories and we're going to give you a little time for this. Then at the end, we're just going to see, you know, whether we how we came into this. You know, whether we have some agreement on what might be a U.S. value or a Western European value, what might not be, and we'll do some further stuff after that. So why don't
Could
we just
you
start
run through that day? Second sorting again?
The second sorting is to pair them up. Take your two piles. Take a look at, you know, what you have on one side and see what you have on the other side that might be the opposite value. And it may look very easy, but when we did this recently with the Latin American missionaries, we found that people can think all kinds of, you know, and it might be two values that you have on one side. You know, there are three cards that you'll put together saying this is this, and these two we think match with that in different ways. And so it came. We came up with a lot of discussion, and it got very interesting. So we'll start over here, you know, it's a we'll number by, and up to four.
One.
Two.
Three.
Four. One.
Two.
Four.
Four.
One.
In most places.
Okay, we'll call the halt. You are where you are. And that's, and the ones that are still in your hands, that's interesting too, you know.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do. So, you know, you can stay right where you are, but maybe you want to shift around so you can sort of see everybody else in the room a little bit. What we're just going to do is have you each group go around and say, give one of their pairs, then I'm going to ask, does everybody else agree? You know, if it was something you struggled over, you know, then say a word about what was the struggle about it. And then we'll talk about what ended up in the middle. But we'll start with group one. Just give me any pair, you know, a slam dunk, whatever it was, or anywhere you want to throw up. Somebody want to just...
Well, of course, one of the easy ones was past orientation and future orientation.
And which was which?
Yeah.
Past orientation is more the others, that the future is
what?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, everybody agree with that?
No.
Nope. Okay.
Because I think a lot of other countries, that gives them hope that the future is going to be different than it is right now. And if you look at a lot of countries are taking note of global warming, but the United States is just putting its head in the sand there.
Very interesting comment.
So we didn't know where to put the future. The
other countries
sure.
are taking a much more proactive stance on population problems, for instance. Mm-hmm.
Those are Western cultures, though, that you're talking about now.
Yeah, or a perception of
it. I'm sorry?
Maybe the Europeans and first world nations are doing that, but I think third world nations are.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
You didn't think third world
nations? I don't think third world nations are worried about the future so much as right here, right now.
And he's saying, as opposed to Western, it might be a Western European orientation,
yes.
Isn't it? Maybe not. I mean, there's no right or wrong answers here, so. Yeah. Okay, and group two, throw out something.
Oh, we had competition and cooperation as the next one, the competition being ours and cooperation being the rest of the world.
How do the rest of you feel about that?
Yeah.
Seems good.
I think Americans could cooperate too.
We can.
Yes,
of course we can.
Okay, very good. Group three.
We didn't know what to do with, we didn't know what to do with Martin.
Just anyone.
You do.
All right, so we did formality and informality.
And which one are we sitting here in our jeans this morning?
Informality.
Okay, how the rest of you feel about it? Groups?
Although less so in the European nations. Formality is much more than here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, group four. Throw out one.
That's interesting because our take is on the general peoples, that they're not as serious about being formal in their everyday life.
So you put in, so
yeah, I mean, we dress up to go to work, and I mean, all this, that kind of formality stuff, so it's a matter of probably thinking in terms of informal.
And interacting with other people, too.
Yeah.
Like, hi, guys, versus, oh, Mr. Jones.
Well, yeah.
This,
yeah.
This is my job. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we had it the opposite way.
Mm. Did you?
No.
No, did
you?
Do you have the formality? We've got formality
Well, I disagree with that. I think we're the great, the U.S. is the great, and I'm an example of this, the great informal culture. Sit here in a t-shirt and a hat on in a building, and that would be pretty outrageous thing in Latin America, in Mexico. Uh-huh. The Mexicans honor their elders with doña, you know. We ship our elders to nursing homes. That one doesn't work.
Yeah. I think just greetings or farewells are a good example where the formality versus informality. Generally speaking, out the rest of the world, that's taken very seriously. A namaste in Nepal. China, I mean, people will say, wave to you for 15 minutes as you depart.
That's a good, yeah.
You know, we're about so long and you're off to your next task.
Yeah.
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 So,
eating is another area. I was down in Brazil. They don't eat with their fingers. They eat with utensils. We had an exchange student. She didn't want to pick up French fries with her fingers and potato chips and those type of things. It was very difficult for her to actually touch the food with her fingers. She usually ended up wrapping things up if she didn't have a knife and fork to eat. Mm-hmm. So very formal.
What does McDonald's do?
Eat them out of the package.
They have these little forks that you stick in them.
All right, great, this is good. Oh, group four, throw one of yours out.
Okay.
You want me to grab one?
Yeah.
Spirituality, detachment, and with materialism, acquisitiveness.
Yeah. What's what?
Materialism, definitely American.
Yeah. Is there agreement among the other groups or discussion?
I don't know. Materialism goes with wealth. Yes. And then, like the oil countries in the Middle East, once they've gotten some wealth, all of a sudden they're buying SUVs and TV sets.
China.
Or China.
China wants to have what the U.S. has.
Did the other groups have
No, we didn't pair. We had materialism with juxtaposed to close human interaction.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Here, everything we're acquiring and want material things. And my experience with people from other cultures who come here, they look and see the abundance of things we have and the huge houses that we have, the huge cars that we have, and they have none of that. They have a very small home with a very intimate family, and relationships are what's most important to them. And they are very interested in making closer relationships with people here. They're really not into acquiring, but they can get caught up in it. Because it's so abundant around here.
So we had spirituality and detachment juxtaposed to control over time.
Oh, that's interesting. Huh.
Mm-hmm. You want to say more about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, we this wasn't the ones that just came clearly to us, but I mean, just my take on that is that is obviously you know which is which. I think control over time to have sort of a very longer term perspective from a spiritual one and sort of thinking things very holistically is very different. I mean, as you know, if you've been in those places, that apart from the clear human interaction, it's mysterious first to us, or is to me when I go to these places, because there isn't that I gotta kind of do these things. And as you get to know people, I think there is this more of a, there's more going on here than checking off my to-do list each day. And to me, it's getting into a little bit about what is life truly about. And that gives a bit of a detachment over controlling each moment of the day. So that's the link there.
Wow. I like that process. It's really great. Well, let's go back to number one. Sometimes it might help to just sort of, you know, put away the ones that we've already talked about so you know what. You don't need to repeat
over time out of there.
And just pile them up.
These might come back. This one.
Oh, well, we paired the being orientation with the action and work orientation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like, yeah. All the way through. Mm-hmm.
There was a man in the village last week who had a shirt that said, you know, it is wonderful to do nothing and then rest afterwards. And I thought, you know, that's just not something that we think that he wore it every day, kind of like a flag. This is my statement.
But again, isn't this something which, when you think about Japan, for instance, or mm-hmm. China?
Oh, absolutely, it's a value there too. These don't necessarily have to be Western. This is sort of more us versus anybody else in the world. It doesn't happen. I mean, the doing orientation is clearly in other places as well.
And some of that is the circumstances of the economy. Mm-hmm. You don't have a job, then not doing anything mm-hmm. is kind of socially acceptable, but nobody has jobs. Very much that they can do.
But what I've seen is those people who don't have jobs are working even harder because survival even becomes more critical. Yeah. I mean, then you have to be scrambling every minute, you know, just to make ends meet and put food on the table. So
unless you have a government that is subsidizing you so that you don't have to. Mm. In Slovakia, a village we went to had over 50% unemployment, and it was not economical for them to try to find work because they could get more from the government than working, so they sat around and drank beer and socialized and were just being.
Mm. Well, group two again.
Individualism, independence versus group welfare and dependence. Mm-hmm.
How the rest of you feel?
Yeah.
Anything, any other variation on that or?
Okay. We had close human interaction, fate and destiny tied with individualism and independence.
You want to say more about why do we do that?
Well, close human interaction opposed to individualism and independence, that's as opposing values. And then somehow we tied in fate and destiny because we felt that in the United States people have this feeling that they can make their own destiny, you know, rise above their circumstances and so on.
Mm-hmm. Welcome, come on in. Okay. Any reaction? There? Okay, number four. Throw out another one that we haven't talked about.
Well, we paired hierarchy, rank, and status with equality and fairness.
Well, what was what?
Well, equality and fairness is more of a Western value. The hierarchy, and the social, different social groups, more of a non-Western, you know.
Any reactions? What did you guys do with that?
We had quite some discussion with that, with thinking of the United States. Equality and fairness is something that we would like to claim as a value. It's more of an ideal. We claim it, but we don't do it. Where the equality and the fairness, if you get down to the peoples of some of these tribal areas, and you go there and you're welcomed, you're one of them, you know, unless you try to make like you're somebody else. I mean, there's just as a value, it's that they're all people. Mm-hmm. They're welcomed into their homes and so on.
There is sometimes a difference between the value and the practice. You know, the data models
merge. So,
and we were thinking about communist countries, which of course made equality
espoused value, but there was pretty sophisticated.
Some people were
there.
More equal than others. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what. Good. Well, what about you? We'll take one more round of this. You know, so pick out what you think is your best, most interesting or discussion.
I still think our most interesting one is spirituality.
And we'll start, of course, with number one.
We didn't pair up the birthright and inheritance or anything, but saw that as more of a Western thing. There was some that we were kind of like, well,
Well, talk about what you put it with there. What was it?
We didn't put it with anything. We didn't. That was one that we didn't get paired up.
Oh, okay. Well, I know you guys are working on what you're going to say, but she just said that the birthright inheritance, they didn't pair it up with anything.
Neither did we.
But you assigned it, you called it an American value?
How did you react to it?
Well, I reacted.
Right.
The government just turned that law around, so we now have laws that protect inheritance. I mean, that's no, I mean, that the law of the land says we're going to protect money and people with wealth. That's, so I would have to say that's the value of this country.
Well, you, okay, this group said they didn't. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
But I realized I had to eat breakfast before they closed that. I'm sorry, so
we wondered why you left the room, Scott.
but when I heard that first, I was thinking more in terms of the rigid birthright and inheritance you see in, for instance, the Old Testament, mm-hmm. where the eldest yeah. son gets so much mm-hmm. and then it's divided next. Or even in the Middle Ages where the eldest gets everything and the eldest son gets everything and everybody else.
See, my response to that is, I think there are values that are taught in U.S. history courses that show how the United States is different and equal, but and we don't have like Mark Twain. When we read Mark Twain, that we Mark Twain looks at the kings and the queens, and we have the democratically elected. So these are the principles of the founders that we still pay lip service to. But in fact, we're doing everything we can to overturn those values practically. My read on a lot of this stuff.
But that sure shows up in many cultures, that protection of wealth.
Yeah.
It's a pretty standard.
Yeah. Thing. But we hide it. We have it in the history book, but we overturn it in practice.
Okay, we had two groups that didn't know where to put it, and then we had two groups that must have put it with something. What did you put it with?
Well, we struggled a little bit. We were sorting just right up until the very end, but right now we've got birthright and inheritance juxtaposed to self-help and initiative.
Mm. That's what the authors of the exercise would say, you know, for whatever it's worth. But I really liked what people here did with their with self-help, too. You know, we had self-help in different places. And where did you guys
with self-help?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
birthright.
Oh, birthright. We didn't.
Oh, you also had it.
We did.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. Wow. It's the idea of you make your own way versus you get,
I think a more center of the onion view of this is training in agricultural economics and development. Had a professor at University of Minnesota, Phil Rom, a great, wonderful guy. He talked about the different models of economic development that took place in different parts of the world. The Latin America in particular had a more southern European one where there was not the availability of credit. And so people could not get money to pull them, to do things. Mm-hmm. Where in North America, it was always available, and the little guy, if they had an idea, could develop. And that's very true as you look at different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. To me, it's more, that's probably more operative than this. If that was more available in Latin America, maybe Africa, through these micro loan programs that we've talked about in other deals, then self-help and initiative can really become
a value.
But I think there's barriers to entry to that in the developing world that doesn't allow this to happen. So to me, that's today more operative than some of these, value pickings.
Wow. That's a great observation. Well, we're going to run out of time before we get, let's let you guys go. There's a couple more things we wanted to do.
Well, we didn't know what to do with, we have change is positive, stability, tradition, continuity, and control over environment.
Mm. Those were the three that were just kind of hanging.
Well, no, we
put
it
together. You put it together.
Change is positive, and stability, tradition are certainly, we think, are ones. But control over environment was kind of a hang on here.
It hangs on to which one? It hangs on to the...
It's the opposite of the change is positive.
Okay. What do you guys...
Well, control in the sense of keeping it the way it is, not changing it in some planned way.
What did other groups think about that?
We put the control over the environment along with the fate or your destiny. Thinking that if you can control the environment, you can change that.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Well, we had fate and destiny with idealism and theory.
Wow, we're going down a really interesting path. But going, control over environment, did either one of these two groups want, or
we didn't pair it up either.
Okay. Okay. You guys, anything more comments about that? Okay, number three, what would you like to throw up?
Well, we didn't. We just now had the thought that maybe idealism / theory. We thought that was American. Idealism theory.
Yeah.
And so we didn't know what to pair it with, because practicality and efficiency, that's also American. So we didn't know what to do with those two. In the sense of pairing.
Any other reactions to that?
Put fate and destiny with those two.
With
idealism
theory.
Then other cultures just take things, that's just the way it's supposed to be, and you can't do anything to change it, it's our destiny.
And what did people oppose? We said practicality and efficiency were very American, and then what did people oppose to that?
That was another of ours that we had.
We didn't pair it with.
Okay. Wow, well, this could really go. Now you can see that it's not just a slam dunk, this and that down the line. But we'll take one more example, and then we'll do our last couple of things. Did you have one more you'd like to throw out there, or one particular controversy that was, or something that was left? No? That's okay if you don't.
One thing I think was a little bit different from what other people paired up, individualism and independence versus close human interaction. I think a Western ideal is, the lone cowboy on his horse, he's doing his own thing and he's got control, versus people working together. Which is not something that I think that we hold up as an ideal as much as being the hero.
Well, good. Well, thank you for this piece of the exercise here. We've got very few minutes. We had 2 minutes, according to my clock, for us to do.
Can we go 5 minutes longer?
Yeah. What we wanted to ask you is, it says 5 assumptions, that you take with you when you travel. Well, this group has got the wisdom here to say, we've got 5 assumptions, but let's hear, everybody, people think about, what would you like to throw out as one of the assumptions?
I'll give you one that Mary and I thought, we can fix it. That was kind of the U.S. thing. It's all about that. And we take that with us on mission trip. All over the world.
Our way is the best way.
Yeah.
And both those assume that it is broken.
Yeah, that's
definitely broken. What else do
we will give more than we'll receive.
I like that one.
I suppose another way of saying that would be, we're here to help you.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. She just used the magic language. How can we help?
You guys need to change.
But help, meaning our not what do you need, but
when we think we you need,
you know, what of ours can we give to you?
We're almost there. What else? These are kind of all interconnected pretty deeply.
Here's what you need.
Well, we know what's best.
Well, that's our way of
doing it. Oh, yeah.
Never give me different ways of doing things. You can adapt to our ways. But you need to take the initiative to change to our ways.
You change.
Yeah.
How about in the time is money category? Anything about time attitudes that we take to this? Like, you were late. Why were you late?
Yeah.
You need to shape up.
This is a little bit. I know it's sort of wonderful. The difference between a tourist and a traveler.
Mm-hmm.
Most people that are non-North American see us as tourists,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bopping from one bus to the next, from one hotel, not really traveling through an understanding and just...
And just taking wherever you can instead of absorbing what's going on. Mm-hmm.
Wow, we got more than five. Well, that's really a great list. But you know, if you look at a lot here, underlying a lot of this is power. And not only power, it's power and it is what we call skin privilege. You know, that's very, very real, you know. Where it's me going into a community of indigenous people in El Salvador and having them look at me and say, well, you know what we should do. You just tell us. You know, they don't know me. They don't know my background, but they do know enough to know that I've had the educational basis. You know, and that and it's just the skin privilege that we walk around with. So we sometimes think of ourselves when we go to a different culture, we get thrown off center as being powerless, but we're still incredibly powerful wherever we are, and you know, we have to acknowledge that.
So you're saying that is an expectation of people in El Salvador.
And sometimes it is. Yes, it is.
Oh, you were saying that we...
It's an expectation. And then for me to be able to say, no, I don't. You know, I can't tell you. You know, you tell me, you know, and what you think. It's not me. But you know, you get a group together and people will say, people can say that to you. So... It's something that we always need to be aware of. We think of ourselves, like we go to a culture, we might be thrown off balance. We feel off balance maybe because we feel powerless, but we're walking with an incredible amount of power that we need to, you know, we need to be able to step back from. And it's so easy, you know. Our way is the best way. I mean, it's just so easy. So it's really, really a delicate dance of being able to give your suggestions, you know, but maybe not giving your suggestions sometimes. Maybe just letting people, you know, be in the process. So, I mean, it's very complicated.
Well, it's kind of like the leadership thing of not saying this is what you need to do until you elicit from everybody.
And even after you've elicited, who are you? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we do have we have things to offer. It's not like we're not gifted. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I just came back with a delegation. We did a church service, and I really loved what one of our delegates said. He got up and he says, you know, I've been dealt the four aces in life. I'm a North American, you know, and I'm white, and I've been educated, you know, and what was that? And I'm a male. Yeah. You know, he says, so what am I going to do with the four aces? You know, how am I playing them? You know, it's really a big question. And, you know, he took it into how much he got, how much he learned, and how, so, you know. So, I mean, these are all things, I guess, I wanted to read just briefly a couple things to sort of tie this up, because we got one more minute left. Cultural competence takes years to acquire. This was written by a missionary after 6 years of service, well, during the end of her 6 years of service. Not only language fluency, but cultural competence requires years and years to acquire, as far as we can tell. We've been searching for shortcuts to this experience, but so far we haven't found them. Again, there is much naivety on our part and on the part of others about how quickly one might acquire sufficient competence to be able to act meaningfully and with power in a context which is so very different from the one in which we were raised. And so basically what she's saying, and the second part of this here, is we've come to understand better that because things are so different, it actually required a considerable investment of precious staff energy and time to host us as mission workers. We were high maintenance people for them. To orient us to the realities here, to make sure we don't get hurt or assaulted, much less to explain the dynamics going on in a million different aspects, it was a lot of work to become our handlers. I mean, we think how easy, you know, let's take a trip, let's take these 12 people down to this community, you know, or how are we thinking about, and that's not a bad thing, but let's be aware, you know, what we're doing there.
When we were discussing this, I was just reflecting back on Abriendo Caminos, where those of you on staff had the opposite experience, that, you know, to invite in a couple of hundred people who have Spanish as a first language, think of all the things that we did differently for a week in order to try to create a welcoming environment. Everybody on staff thinks that takes a lot more work than a regular week at Holden, so it kind of, the reverse happens. Have you had that experience, like going to see Medardo and El Salvador, the being handled aspect?
I'm sure, the high maintenance piece is a bingo for me.
But it seems like you're not a high maintenance person, how does that turn into high?
I think people go out of their way and wear themselves out and take care of us every minute. And I know when the shoe's on the other foot, you know, I know where at the end of 3 weeks I'm tired, you know, so, and I hit my limits. So I think that's the biggest thing that Mary said for me.
Okay, I'm going to end with I'm just going to read the seven lessons here. This comes from the cross-cultural dialogues, Craig Sorteith. Just I'm going to throw them out. You don't have to write them down. You know, just lesson one, don't assume sameness. Lesson two, what you think of as normal or human behavior may only be cultural, cultural is everything. Number three, familiar behaviors may have different meanings. Number four, don't assume that what you meant is what was understood. Number five, don't assume that what you understood is what was meant. Number six, you don't have to like or accept different behavior, but you should at least try to understand where it comes from. And I would say probably if you're going to live somewhere, you have to have a certain level of acceptance or you're never going to make it. You can't fight all the time. Number seven, most people do behave rationally. You just have to discover the rationale. Right? Because there are reasons behind it. So anyway, we want to just thank you for coming this morning, and this was a very rich discussion. You've added as much to us, you know, as we could have ever expected. And just really exciting to hear all the different inputs that you gave. And we'll be looking forward to seeing you perhaps in other sessions. We're going to be talking about international travel opportunities, and tomorrow morning we're going to focus on the Lutheran churches in Latin America. So thanks.